Hold a seat at the bar to join us for another episode of McAnally's Pubcast, a podcast exploring the fun and fantastical mind of Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files series. Hosts Tanzin Jess and Maggie bring you another round of literary analysis on this immense, immersive, and colorful environment inhabited by Harry Dresden, the world's only licensed private investigator and professional wizard. Join an active and engaged community of new and diehard dedicated fans focused on the fabulous themes, theories, characters, context, lore, and more. This is McAnally's Dresden Files Pubcast by Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.
Welcome to the McAnally's Pubcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 17.10, Love and Anarchy, where we are covering the novel Proven Guilty. My name is Tanzin, and I am joined by Jess.
193 days.
And our guest, Shayla.
Hello, hello.
Still no Mamushka. She's dead. Send flowers and money.
Please. Mostly money. Chapter 13. Harry is questioned by Homicide Detective Sergeant Green when Murphy comes to the rescue. Murphy joins the investigation and enlists Harry to consult.
Mom, you're missing your namesake.
The family Greens!
Mm-hmm.
Those greenies.
I really like this opening line, actually. The authorities arrived and replaced crisis with aftermath.
It's really good.
So good.
So Harry and Rollins' new job, sit with the bodies, wait for help to arrive. And Molly shows up pretty quick. Turns out the guy, girl, that Harry is sitting with is Rosie, Molly's friend.
Yes, and Molly informs that Rosie is not only injured, but she's also 3 months pregnant.
Well, Rosie, if you'd said that, we would have actually let you go to an ambulance. Fuck.
She really concerned about her baby, if she doesn't mention that beforehand, or did she? She could have also passed out.
I guess she's all traumatized and all, like, wishy-washy, but, like, come on, girl!
She could just be dumb.
I didn't know that mattered.
Oh, my God. But why is there always, like, a pregnant chick in a lot of these situations? Like, it's like you've already upped the ante. You've got, like, movie monsters coming out of the screen at this point. Now it's like, oh, we're just going to up the ante a little bit, throw in somebody who's pregnant.
To elicit sympathy.
Yeah, we need it to advance the plot later.
Oh, yeah, I guess
so. What is that?
Yeah.
I haven't read that far.
For the plot.
For the plot. There can't be future books if we're not constantly having children in the early books, okay?
Oh, fair enough.
Everyone was dead. The end. So Rosie recounts to Molly what happened, and she really truly believes that the Reaper was actually there and not somebody in costume.
I also love those, like, moments, like, in any slasher movie. Like, oh my god, it was the psycho killer, it was the Reaper, it was Freddy, it was Jason. No, honey, you're just delusional. It couldn't have been. Meanwhile, Molly, I'm sorry, your dad's, like, doing what for a living?
That's what I mean, though. Like, I hope this was all just Molly being all reassuring to Rosie, because, girl, you're not in any position to doubt.
Yeah, like, you brought in Harry for what reason? A fucking decoration at this point?
Well, I'm sure she's expecting something weird to be going on, but that's really oddly, specifically, very bizarre.
Like, yeah, I'm not used to movie monsters coming to life.
Okay, yeah, character from a movie.
So I do wonder, though, like, how much Michael does share with his family, because they know what Dad's job is, but I guess he's probably not coming home and giving, like, the annual report of exactly what he fought and what they did to him and what he did to them.
Right, they would probably be at least a little bit sheltered. Like, yeah. Yes, granted, she is the oldest, but that's...
Yeah, I still don't expect this family to be.
Maybe point out, too, like, just as a mom perspective, kids hear a lot more than you realize. Like, they eavesdrop so badly, and like, I was guilty of it when I was a kid. Like, straight up, I used to listen in on my mom and stepdad's conversations.
That ignorance is bliss. Holy shit. Okay, mom's not gonna tell me. I'm gonna read her email and her mail, and I'm gonna find out and then be horrified by the information I learned and be like, I sure wish I didn't know this now.
Okay, I definitely didn't go that far. I wasn't that nosy.
No, I but, definitely
like, my kids, like, it's the same with, like, you swear not knowing your kids are there, and then, you know, you're driving down and your kid's, like, yelling out fuck or something like that, and it's hilarious, and then you can't laugh, and it's like, crap, I can't give you shit because I said it.
Yeah, if anyone was eavesdropping on things, I guess I would assume it was Molly.
Yeah, she does have that sort of temperament.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even then, like, you're with talking in hushed voices. If you're talking in your bedroom, like, before you go into bed, like every married couple does. If one of the kids gets up in the middle of the night because they have to go to the bathroom or they want to drink water and happen to walk by their bedroom door and overhear it, you can't tell me they're not going to stop and listen.
Well, and how much of the stuff that Michael does is a crossover to what Harry would have exposed them to, and she hasn't seen Harry in quite a while.
I was gonna say, Michael's main goal is to just go after fallen angels, okay? That's his 99.9% of his job is just to cover those guys, right? Harry's the one who does literally everything else.
So, like, the fae and ghosts and
vampires,
like, magic isn't really something that...
possession.
Yeah, but how many times has Harry probably roped Michael into his bullshit?
Well, there's that
But we know
well.
It's been a couple of years since he's been in their life.
This is true, so...
She would've been at least a little bit young.
But still, I mean, you know, I'd say like 10 is about age to start understanding what the fuck your parents are whispering about.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And I can't imagine that he would have spent a lot of time talking, especially being at the Carpenter home with her around, with Charity not being so charitable of his
no,
presence.
But Michael and Charity themselves discussing, like,
yeah,
you know, Charity got kidnapped.
Well, you'll never
and then
what
had to go through a Harry just
Harry
rescue.
This time. Right.
Okay.
But anyways, I don't know. It's hard to say. But I still feel that Molly is in some ways, you know, maybe she doesn't know all the specifics. But girl, come on. More than anyone else here in this convention hall.
You literally called in a wizard because supernatural shit is going on. And you have a feeling that that is involved. Like, there's got to be some things where it doesn't seem that far-fetched.
I've never been in an ambulance before. And I would assume that they would let a friend come or whoever was with you. But at the same time, like, it's funny. It's just like every book, TV show, movie, whatever. It's just whatever's most convenient for the plot, which is obviously that's why they exist. But it's like sometimes it's like, they won't let me ride. I'm not family. And then other times it's like, let me come so I can keep her company. And it's like, oh, yeah, get out of here. We don't want you around right now, Molly. Go away. It's just funny. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Damn it. Can we just get some fucking rules on this, please?
So as the EMTs load up Rosie, Harry notices some small round marks in the crook of Rosie's arm. So I know what I'm assuming here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye track marks.
Yeah. Which may also be why, like, could be potential why Molly is sort of listening to what she's saying and being like...
Mm. Yeah, like, that definitely puts things in perspective, too, to why she might be, like, a little...
dubious.
Hesitant on believing her.
So, Sergeant Green.
A lovely, lovely man. I just picture a cop with, like, a huge gut and a bald head and a really thick mustache that just doesn't want to put up with anybody's shit and would rather be anywhere else than there.
Totally opposite. I think this is a guy who's, like, fucking finally. I didn't have anything to do. Now I get to go and fucking question a wizard.
I've heard of this guy. I'm going to put him through the
yeah,
river.
Exactly. This is my chance. I'm going to shake down the wizard.
Good luck.
Nobody else has managed to keep him in the clink. I will.
It'll be me this time. And he makes Drezin
recount
the story.
And he says clink, too.
Yeah, okay, does he say clink? Nice. So, here's the thing. He makes Drezin go through this 5 times, and we don't get to see all 5 times. We only get to see the first one. But Harry's exact wording was, the lights went out, people panicked, we heard screams, Rollins went to help, and I went with him.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he says to him. Meanwhile, to just his inner thoughts, he was, like, painting this beautiful picture, and he was like, the guy had muscles that you get from, like, you know, long, hard, laborious work, and, like, he looks like this, and, like, to Green is, like, 300 pounds, maybe 325, whatever. And I'm just like, okay, I know you know how to be more descriptive than that, sir.
You can tell he's just kind of being an asshole. Like, maybe it's more Harry that it's just like, I would rather be anywhere else.
Well, I'm just wondering, it's like, okay, don't bore the audience with, like, saying the exact same thing over, but this is the time now to give as much detail as possible. Or maybe he's just assuming that the cop does his job well enough. He doesn't need all that flowery words. He's just like... point, point, point. Let's go.
Well, and he already kind of knows that whatever he's going to say anyways, because it's supernatural in nature, is really just going to not be listened to regardless.
Yeah,
so he's just like,
funny.
All right, we're going to do this again. Shit.
Harry has no problem talking about the supernatural in front of some random cabbie, but to the cops, he's like, I'm not wasting my fucking breath on you losers.
Yeah.
Just not going to believe me anyway.
Who cares? And then, oh my gosh, we get this why question again. It's actually been coming up a lot in later books. It's like, everyone wants to know, why, Harry? Why are you throwing yourself into this? Why are you doing it? And the cop is a little bit snarky here about it. He's like, oh, you're just some kind of hero, right? And Harry's all like, well, I don't know. I was there. People needed help. But it's, I don't know, it's just this reoccurring theme of people just being like, hello, Harry.
Don't understand why he'd be altruistic and help.
Exactly. And it's just, I don't know, more confronting Harry over and over and over again and him still not having an answer and just being like, there's no other option. If I'm here, I'm going to help. But everyone being like, bitch. Everyone else ran screaming.
I mean, what's a good reason for Butcher to do that repeatedly?
Well, I don't know. I think it's more just A, you're establishing your character as one of the good guys when you have, as Harry is, a really morally gray, unreliable narrator this whole time. It's like, all the people around you are just keep asking you, like, why are you here? Why are you doing this? What's your motivation in forcing Harry to, like, almost be? Forcing Harry to be a person.
I mean, if we're going for the self-aware point, it does sort of... He will, in the next chapter at least, I mean, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. He's going through sort of a self-reflective, self-doubt period. So maybe this is just more emphasis where other people are questioning, why are you doing the things you're doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, and exactly just having these people who are 50-50. Some of these are the bad guys to Harry and some of these are the good guys to Harry. And they're all just like, bro, why are you here over and over and over again? Him being like, where else would I be? Ha ha ha. But I don't know. The narrative, I guess, forcing Harry to acknowledge the narrative of his own life and,
right.
I don't know, his role in it all. So, I mean, honestly, it just goes back and forth with Harry getting more and more upset and annoyed with this guy until beautiful, lovely, amazing Murphy shows up holding beautiful, amazing, lovely coffee.
Yes, the angel.
Yes.
Angel of mercy, Murph.
And I like how in this scene she doesn't immediately just, like, vilify Green, honestly. She's like, yeah, you know, it's annoying, but it actually does work. And he would be captain if he had a personality. But she's not just immediately being like, oh, fuck this guy. Like, I can't believe, like, what are you doing putting my friend through the ringer? She does acknowledge that, like, he's actually doing his job the way he's supposed to.
Yeah.
You may be annoyed by it, Harry, but that's, so far we're within regulation, okay? It's not a vendetta
against
you. But you
always, like, again, like, I love how a lot of this book translates so easy to horror because you always get that one cop. That's just asking so many questions and repeating them, trying to stump you, where they come across as absolute dicks, but they're doing their job.
And it adds an extra level of threat to the characters that are like, okay, well, if I fuck this up, then I'm going to jail too.
Yeah.
Well, and the fact that Harry just immediately knows that Green has got him pegged as an accomplice in some way, somehow, he already knows more than he's saying. And we've seen that so many times in these novels as well with Harry being arrested because it's like, well, you're the only guy talking right now. And he's like, yeah, because I know things, damn it.
Because I'm investigating it.
Yeah, it's rough out here, bud. But then he gives this quick, you know, we've kind of touched on it before, but this quick, you know, description of the two different kinds of cops, the ones who have seen some supernatural and are willing to believe, at least when the going gets tough, versus the cop that has never seen anything and is like, go fuck yourself. AKA, you know, we've got Rudolph and Green here right now there.
Mm-hmm.
But, as Harry says, makes damn good detectives. Just doesn't help me all that often.
So Green regards Murphy with some sarcasm, and Murphy returns in kind when they start going at it. And Murphy insists on helping with the case, which Green really doesn't like nor want. But she threatens to go to the press with if she can't help out. So he finally relents. Tells Harry, don't leave town!
Oh, yeah, I gotta always, like, really drill that in. Don't leave town. I may need to speak to you again.
Here's my card. Tell me if you know anything.
Here's my card. Tell me if you know anything. I really love that exchange between Murphy and Green. Like, oh, yeah? Yeah?
Here's mine.
That's nice. Nice little turn on it.
It's almost like American Psycho, where they're, like, presenting, like, their business cards and everything and going on of, like, the color and the quality and the print. And it's just like, that just popped into my mind. With less details, of course.
I love the trading business cards, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a nice moment.
Just be really funny if Harry's just like, you see the shot, and Murphy's very, very short, but this is the cinematic moment. If you can all just please imagine it. Murphy's standing on a box. It's not in the shot, but she's tall enough that she can look eye to eye with Green, okay? And Harry's sitting on the floor, so you cannot see him in the shot, okay? Is everyone imagining this correctly?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, Green hands the business card to Murphy. Murphy hands her business card to him. Out of the bottom of the camera, you just see a hand emerge, and it's Harry's business card, just like slowly tucked into Green's palm as well. Me too, guys. You
can
see how it's
helping.
This professional wizard on there.
We could rewrite these books with all these funny moments. I swear, that'd be great.
Let me come and be in charge of the new TV show, okay? Not in charge. I couldn't do all that work, but just extra moments.
We have a new YouTube channel. What you're not seeing.
We're going to set up a live camera in here one day, and you'll get to see all the dumb bullshit we do.
Harry recounts what happened to Murphy about bailing out Nelson and then what happened at the con. And Murphy, of course, concludes it was supernatural.
We did. We forgot to mention that. Green knows that Harry bailed Nelson out of the jail just a couple of hours ago, and now he's finding very suspicious that, you know, a near identical attack has happened. That makes Harry look pretty suspicious, and I like that Harry's just like, so. Personal reasons. All right.
Because
bud.
I fucking could. How's that?
Don't you normally just go to jail and randomly bail people out for $2,000?
You mean that's not an average Thursday for you? That's not what you spend your extra cash on?
It's so funny because at least in some places, when you get a DUI and somebody goes and bails you out before, like, you can either just stay in jail for like 12 hours, whatever, till you sober up, or somebody can come and get you out sooner. And if somebody comes and gets you out sooner, they have to sign for you and take responsibility for you so you get behind a wheel again if you drink anything else, if you do any more crimes for the next 24 hours. The person who bailed you out is also held liable now because, you know, you're the one who's taking responsibility. It's kind of funny that that doesn't happen for bail. You can just go and release a potentially murderous person who's already got a record and then be like, okay, bye. Go live your life, bud. It's kind of funny that they didn't make Harry sign and be like, I promise he will not get up to any more hijinks for 24 hours.
There will be no more shenanigans for the next 24 hours.
Yeah. But then you'd have Nelson, like, tied to his hip for the rest of this novel, and Harry would be, like, the one killing him.
Yeah, no, Nelson goes into the bathroom, and, like, something else happens in a bathroom Nelson happens to be in with. You're now responsible because you let Nelson go to the bathroom.
Yeah, at that point, I'd be like, kid, you can pee in this bush for the next 24 hours where there's, like, cameras on you at all times.
Here is a bucket.
Yeah. Oh, you need to do that? Clench.
No more privacy for you. So Murphy's gonna drive him home. Thank you, Murphy.
Thank you, Murphy.
Yeah. We also find out Rollins went to the hospital for the cut he took. Apparently yeah. Also not good, so that's where Rollins ended up.
And Murphy is a woman after my own heart. I guess I missed that one. There's been 11 films on it. I guess I missed 11 films. Me too, Murphy.
Yeah, 11 films. Yeah, that's... For a slasher flick, that's pretty fucking standard. I mean, Friday the 13th alone, not including Freddy versus Jason, and this just really solidifies the Reaper being Jason, is there's actually 11 Friday the 13th films.
Which, you know, doesn't shock me. I find that
12 if you include Freddy versus Jason. And for all the non-horror listeners, if you're wondering why there's never been a 13th made... It's licensing issues. It has been for so many years.
That's crazy. I'm sure everyone's fighting for that.
Well, again, like, Jason, the right to the name Jason Voorhees is owned by two different studios, where the rights to Friday the 13th is just owned by one. Yeah, again, as I explained in the last episode, that's why the last two movies, Jason Goes to Hell and Jason X, it was taken on by New Line for Freddy versus Jason, but they couldn't get the name Friday the 13th. But they were trying to, like, Jason Goes to Hell was kind of trying to, like, up the ante on the Freddy versus Jason movie. And that's probably the only good part is at the very end, like, Jason's hand comes out of the dirt and, like, drags his hockey mask to hell. Ugh. But then it didn't end up taking off. It's why we got Jason X, which is Jason in space.
Okay.
I don't care what anybody fucking says. That is my favorite movie of the franchise. It's just... It's
to me,
all the
this
tropes.
Is starting to sound like Sharknado spinoffs.
No, we do not
Which
discuss
I know how much
Sharknado.
I love movies.
Oh my God.
If anyone wants some fun, go find Shay's series on the Sharknado movies.
It's one review. I just crammed all six movies because I could not find enough valuable notes to make them an individual one. I didn't even rank those because I do rank the movies. If it's like more than like three movies, I'll rank. Sometimes if I'm feeling up to it, yeah, no, I'll rank.
I don't think it's fair that people on the internet can only see you rant about how much you hate these movies for like 3 minutes, and I had to listen to it every day for like the 6 weeks it took for you to get through those films. So part of the problem is that, you know, Murphy and Harry are seeing the signs that movie monsters are coming to life, but how are they doing it? And there's some suggestions from Harry, but he hasn't ever seen anything quite like this, so he's not 100% sure yet. Which is useless to us. This is why the fuck you're here. And at that point, Murphy's like, okay, you're on the clock now. Which I really appreciate. And I said this last episode, but it's like, it's about time that he just starts getting paid for a job he's already on rather than Murphy just being like, okay, you're on this now. And him being like, no, wait, I had other things to do. At least he's like, I was already doing this one. Not a problem. And of course, tomorrow is movie fest. Yeah. Tomorrow, Friday night, movie fest. So if you think things are bad now.
There's any number of ones to be drawn from.
And if this is being fueled by the fear of the movie, and this is at HorrorCon, maybe you pussy should just stop being afraid of the monster.
Like, I'm sorry, like, and that's, like, just speaking on that for a quick moment, I'll probably mention it, like, more and more as we go through the chapters. If it's feeding on its fear, like, that's a trope in, like, all movies from the 80s, essentially. If you're scared of it, it keeps its power. You see it. Yeah, it.
The biggest one being it.
Freddy is another one. Like, you're scared of him, and that's how he gets his power. Maybe not so much for, like, Jason or Michael. Like, it's really just a big supernatural dude with, like, some sort of weapon that does not give a shit and will fuck you up no matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you're not afraid of them. It's very much shown in those movies, like people trying to square up to them. It doesn't matter. But yeah, Pennywise is a huge one.
Yeah.
These kids are afraid of it, and it keeps getting stronger and stronger, and that's how they defeat it. It's like, no, fuck you. We're not scared of you. And he ends up being the small thing, so they defeat it the first time and the second time.
Well, see, and I get this whole, you know, in the Dresden Files itself, too, fear is a big thing, and controlling your emotions is a big thing. But you're at HorrorCon. These are the people that are supposed to be able to handle this shit. Stop being afraid, and then we don't have this problem, guys.
See,
it's because of the kid's birthday party. Like,
see, I would talk, like, a big game on this, too, but as I mentioned in the last episode, I don't do good with, like, ghost movies and stuff and things popping out at me. I'd be the worst.
And there's also a little bit of a difference between, you know, the fantasy horror and then real life horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if it's getting its power from fear, just don't be afraid when you watch the movie. I couldn't do it. That's why I don't watch horror movies, okay? I will manifest Jason right next to me. I'm so afraid when I watch movies, okay? But if I'm like Shay, and I should have beaten this out of my system by now.
Okay, I can at least sit through a Friday the 13th. And laugh at it because they're campy and cheesy as all hell and not sit there like a wuss.
Hansen watches campy and cheesy as hell, okay? You watch like, I mean, I'm sure you also watch real horror, but mostly you watch a lot of fucking campy bullshit.
I hit all of the aspects of horror movies.
Point is that neither of you should be manifesting these monsters in your space, okay?
No, absolutely not.
What's that, masochistic? All these losers in this theater are masochistic.
Masochistic?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, that one.
I got it. Yeah.
I knew it wasn't sadistic, okay?
No, masochist.
So, Harry, okay, I don't know if we've passed this or not, or if I'm double backing to it. I know we I'm a little bit weird.
A little bit. I went a bit out of order. I forgot the event's order.
Okay. So, Harry asks Murphy what movie was playing when Clark Pell was attacked, which turns out to be Hammer Hands. Ruffians push this farmer out into train tracks, and then the train cuts his hands off at the wrist. They leave him for dead, but he survives. Insane straps sledgehammer heads to the stumps and hunts them down one at a time.
Okay.
But he's just hunting down the perpetrators who got him the first time?
So, I guess it could be it, but I've got my lore on where Hammer Hands is, like, created from. So I pulled from three on this one.
Okay.
So Freddy was really the first one came to mind. I know Freddy has a claw hand, but when he was alive, because he was accused of murdering kids, we're not going to do, like, the assault, the gross stuff on the kids, because that was more like driven home in the remake. We don't talk about that. But he was accused of killing kids. And he got off on, like, some sort of technicality. And the parents were like, nope, fuck that. Haunted him down and murdered him. So he died with the claw hand. So, and he comes back with it. The next one would be Candyman. And I know Candyman has a hook for a hand. But it was also that mob mentality. He felt he was a slave. Or no, he was a painter. He fell in love with, like, this nobleman's daughter, and they slept together.
I've never mentioned Candyman on the show.
We are now.
He's a big one.
Daniel Robitaille was his name. He was caught with a white woman. He was chased out, beaten by a mob. His hand was cut off, replaced with a rusty hook. Then he was covered in honey and bees. Stung him to death. Which, there's a whole lot of fun facts on, like, the first Candyman, the bee stings. Tony Todd put a clause in that anybody who got...
$1,000 per sting.
Yeah, like, $1,000 per sting. He walked
like
away with, like...
$11,000 or something.
Oh, yeah, he walked away with an additional ridiculous amount of money for it. And, like, other people did, too, because, of course, like, especially Tony Todd, he had live bees crawling all over. Rest in peace, Tony Todd. Holy crap. Such a great actor. Now, the last one, and this one does kind of go towards a hammer, was I drew from the 13 Ghosts. So,
oh, right.
Yeah. So in the 13 Ghosts, there's the whole, like, Black Zodiac. Each ghost has a different story. It's one of my favorite movies. I even have one of the ghosts tattooed on my arm.
That they're, I don't know if they talk about it often, but
they
I think
do.
They're actually really close to making a TV series.
I really
right
hope
now.
They do. I know the latest one I heard, they're hoping to bring Matthew Lillard for it.
Oh,
I hope so. I fucking love Matthew
He's
Lillard.
Great.
He's a sweet baby. Yeah. So the hammer from the 13 Ghosts. The hammer's name was George Markley. This just, I thought I'd put in a condensed version of his backstory. He was, I can't remember what exactly it was. I don't have it in my notes, but he was falsely accused of theft by this guy named Nathan. Nathan is known to be, like, a raging racist. And George is just like, no, I'm innocent, and stood up to him. Like, no, fuck you, basically. So Nathan, the racist, and his little gang, they go out while George is not home, and they beat his wife and children to death. George returns home, sees this, knows exactly who has done it, is not standing for it, takes a sledgehammer, hunts down Nathan and his gang, and beats them to death with this sledgehammer to avenge his family. Like, he's in this rage. George is then executed by them taking his exact hammer and hammering deep-ass nails deep into his body where he dies slowly. So his ghost in the movie is just this really big dude with a bunch of, like, horrible spikes driven through his body wielding a sledgehammer. He's then, of course, taken through. So again, I pulled from, like, a few different things. Maybe Freddy isn't the right one, but I definitely get vibes of, like, Daniel Robitaille from Candyman and George Markley, the hammer from 13 Ghosts. Just...
Well, and I can see
the mob mentality of it.
Because the families that Freddy goes for are the ones, or the ones children that wronged are from him. The family.
Yeah, they're the ones that wronged him.
There's that aspect there of hunting out the ones who did him wrong.
Mm-hmm. I don't want this to be negative commentary in your descriptions of these films, but, like, not one of those made me want to watch any of them. I'm not intrigued. I'm just horrified. I zoned out for as much of it as I could.
I, for one, love all three of them.
I wish.
Exactly.
I wish Mom was here to suffer with me, but I'm more just jealous of her.
Just make her listen to this episode, like, 5 times.
She doesn't watch this show.
She will. Just make her suffer with you or yell at her after. Do what you gotta do, Jess. You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, sure.
But again, like, 13 Ghosts, again, one of my favorite movies. Got the Angry Princess tattooed on my arm.
Nice. That's awesome.
It's one of my favorite tattoos. And, well, she's naked. Who doesn't like forearm boobs?
Oh, that's... No, I like your references there.
Yeah, like, again, some of them super easy to pull from. Scarecrow, I am still having a hell of a time with that one.
So Murphy instructs Harry to get some rest and that she'll try and talk to Pell. And Harry asks her for a ride home. And what happens if we can't stop who's doing it? Then we fight monsters. Thank you to our Patreon subscribers for your generous support. It's people like you who help us do what we do. If you're not yet a Patreon subscriber, sign up today and get a fuck ton of bonus content, kick-ass merch, behind-the-scenes outtakes, and more. Sign up today at patreon.com/freeflowrambling. Chapter 14. Murphy drives Harry home, and they share an intimate conversation.
So Harry's been looking for that tail, apparently the whole drive home.
Rubbernecking.
Not around right now. Oh, the cops are here? I got other places to be. Harry will be fine.
Imagine that. Murphy notices that he's been doing that, so Harry does update.
Thanks for telling
me. On the person. But he says it could also be somebody from a legal team of Larry Fowler. I mean, come back to...
God, that was so fucking long ago. It was. Fowler, fuck me.
The fact that it's still happening. Like, how many years in the actual...
Do you know what book it was?
I don't remember.
It was Masks, yeah. Which was three years. It's been about 3 years.
Which I suppose for litigation, like, that would still be ongoing. But at least he's got somebody that's helping him for
kind of
legal advice. Yeah. He's got some connections.
Yeah, thanks, job. But Murphy makes this insight that she thinks that Harry looks like he's, like, emotionally bleeding. And he just seems, I don't know, beat down.
It's an interesting choice of words.
It's like she's got her own third sight. And yeah, like, I don't know, they make this sort of both of them go back to, again, Harry being upset about the murders that happened in the last novel, which, you know, we've discussed multiple times now. It's not good enough justification for me, but if everyone else is happy with it, whatever. And then, I don't know, Murphy says that they found 3 different sets of blood at the Field Museum.
I was having trouble trying to, like, place some of the stuff that she said, like, without having to actually go back into my notes and reread part of the book. It was like, what is she referring to?
Exactly, and I get...
Like, was this quoted oddly? Like, or is, like, this... Should this be something I have read?
So, they found a corpse in the Field Museum that had been savaged by an animal. They found 3 different blood types on the floor. And, like... Thinking back to what happened in that night, okay, so we had Fuckface get killed.
Yeah.
We had Well, Fuckface got killed by an animal,
which was a mouse.
Okay. And then we had, like, they found three bodies there, is what it says, right? Three bodies. No, they found three, sorry. They found one body and three blood types. So wouldn't Harry's blood be one of them? Because he got tortured while he was there.
Right.
But do they not have Harry's blood in the system at this point? Like, the amount of times he's been arrested and, like, bled on crime scenes and they still didn't pin it back to Harry? Like, is he gonna, like, he's gonna get his blood taken in by police in, like, book 24. And then they're gonna be like, oh my god, man, we can match you up to, like, 85 crime scenes. Like,
you know what we need? We need a coroner to ask.
If only there was another podcast. Like, we covered.
Somebody explain the science and the legal.
You know what? They go through their podcast so much faster than us. They probably covered this book like a year ago.
I bet you. I haven't looked them up recently.
Yeah, I don't know. There's, if anyone listens to both podcasts.
And it's, I think, a brother and sister or something, but the woman actually is a coroner.
We don't listen to other Dresden podcasts because we don't want to, like, accidentally plagiarize ideas or anything like that. Right. But if anyone else listens to both, feel free to tell us if they answered this.
Somebody explain us what they said about this, if they've covered it.
Sign this just that one episode detail only. So that's why it's just confusing to me because, and, like, I get, like, third person's blood was probably Gervain, right? Because he was the only other person that was there.
Did Butters bleed?
Yeah, Butters could have bled. Not in that moment, though. He ran in and, like, rescued Mouse and Harry through a back door. He was, like, supposed to stay in the car or some shit, and then he came in when he heard bullshit. So unless he was already injured, like, I don't think Butters' blood would be there.
Right.
So I feel like it's Gervain and Harry and Fuckface.
Right.
Right? That's all I got.
Hmm. If only we...
I don't know.
Had a Dresden
expert. Mom! God damn it.
Shit. She'll tell us next time.
Yeah. Anyways, point is that they found more bodies and, like, Murphy's all, like, accusing Harry of having done it, and he basically admits to most of them, and he's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I didn't do the headless guy, blah, blah, blah. But, again, the way that she summarizes it, and she wasn't there for literally any of this, so I don't know where the fuck she's coming up with any of this information, but she's like, you've got to talk to someone. It doesn't have to be me, and, like, you weren't there in the heat of the battle when they died. You made a cold, cold choice, and I'm just like, Harry had the same ideas about it, but we disagree. You were in. It was, like, fighting for your life.
There's,
like,
a lot of assertion there, yeah.
Fuckface was torturing him, and you were, like, on the ground thinking to yourself, Michael will show up and save me. That's what Michael does. And then Michael didn't show up, and you're like, okay, I gotta work for myself. And then you had Mouse fucking snap his neck. Like, to me, that's, like, life or death decisions. Not, like, I could have walked away and it would have been fine. Like,
I mean, the Mouse part could have been a little bit more questionable because I guess he could have...
What were you going to do? Turn your back on him? Walk away? Like, oh, he was like... You already know what happens when you beat him to near death. He gets back... He gets better again and then comes after your ass. Like... And Harry has no conniptions about beating the shit out of him with a crowbar the book before. Like, he's like, that one was deserved. But then when he came after me again, and I promised to kill him if he ever came back after me again, and I had Mouse finish him off. Now I'm filled with such horrible, all-consuming guilt about this. And I'm like...
Was it because you had your dog do it, or... And you didn't, or...
No, it's because he thinks that he could have walked away like he did the year before. And it's like, no, you saw what happens when you walked away. He came back after your ass with stronger fucking allies.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, he likes to beat himself up, though, about this stuff always. Like,
I know.
It's not the first time where he's been in this, like...
It's just, I don't know, Murphy being able to almost guess the exact events, too. I'm like, how presumptuous of you. His whole life is life and death. And you're just like, you did it out of cold blood when you didn't have to. I'm like, who the fuck are you, Murphy? You weren't there. That's the only reason you could be so upset now.
I mean, he kind of confirms her, if in some ways, from what he's saying to her that.
I know, and part of the whole thing is, like, these were actually humans for once, not monsters. But I'm like, even that is questionable. Like, at a certain point, a certain amount of corruption. Okay, he wasn't a fallen angel anymore, but he had been for hundreds of thousands of years. Like, that soul was corrupted as shit, and I get Michael's whole job is to save them and not let them be corrupted till the end of time, but clearly it didn't fucking work this time.
Yeah, he was trying his hardest to be corrupted again.
He didn't do any of the saving. He took the coin, but you didn't do any of the rehabilitation, and then he went after Harry, and this is what we end up with. And then the same with the fucking Alicia.
And he wasn't completely powerless. Like, he still had some abilities to, like, do stuff.
He had magic. He'd learned magic in some way, somehow, over the week time. Exactly.
Could have thrown a death curse at any moment there.
He did. He did throw a death curse. Die alone. That's the whole point. It's like, it's just fucking insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. We've said
I did
it so
sort of
times.
Take a pause on the cold-blooded part, too. But, like, in a sort of...
I get, like, a big part of this is that they were humans. And Harry doesn't kill humans. He kills monsters. And the fact that these were humans, that I'm still like... I don't know, bro. Just get over it. And Murphy being all like, go to therapy and you'll feel better. The first time I killed a human, I was also really fucked up about it. I'm like, okay.
Okay, but two different worlds there, Murphy.
but almost, like, not. Like, Murphy's like, it was justified in the moment. I'm like, so was Harry's. Like,
I mean, it is a little bit of a setup just from the author's standpoint to put into this question of doubt that he has with himself, because it starts with the very first chapter about, like, wizards being tainted by dark magic. He came into contact with dark magic. He confides that he was worried that maybe the council is right and that he is tainted, and, like, maybe this is just the start of things, that I just actually wanted him dead. I mean, maybe it's not quite as cleanly done as it could be, but it is definitely following sort of a theme that Butcher is going through in this book so far that I can see.
It's, I don't know, seemingly forced to me. He's, like, really forcing this whole, like, Dresden did something wrong. And I'm like, he did not. He really didn't. I think it was all justified. I don't think, and Harry's made some questionable decisions in the past. These are one of the ones that I'm like, no, kill their ass. They fucking suck. Anyways, Murphy does have a really nice line. I like how she all, like, pulls up against it. And he's like, oh, power of positive thinking. And she's like, no, free will, bitch. You're still in charge of your life, okay? What you've done is done. Now what do you do next? And I'm like, okay, that's very fair.
Yeah, I did like that.
I do like that part a lot where it's like, okay, yes, that's...
You get to choose
master of your own destiny.
How you're going to move forward. Murphy does continue to tell Harry that she does think he's a decent man. Painfully oblivious sometimes. What are we talking about again?
You're tired, you're hungry, you're hurting, and you saw the bad guys do something you couldn't stop. Your morale is low. Also very fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is very fair.
And it kind of explains, like, what you were asking about, how that one spell, like, took it out of them. Like, again...
Don't throw my words back at me.
I'm not throwing your words back
a guest,
at me.
Oh, not my a God. Host.
This is why they tell you to never make life decisions after 9 p.m.
Yeah, fair enough, yep. And don't go grocery shopping on an empty stomach.
Yep.
All facts for life.
So... They continue to converse, and Harry and Murphy admit to one another that they both considered making their relationship a little bit more.
You ever find we're just not at the right place at the right time?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm not even, like, sensing, like, dramatic, like, feelings from them. There is so much sexual tension between those two. It is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
They've definitely flirted before. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Dresden, I think the Butcher did a really good job of evolving the relationship, actually, because, like, they are so contentious in book one, despite apparently being friends. And book two, really. Like,
yeah.
It really isn't until book three when Murphy finally, like, that really big murder house thing happens, where she finally starts coming around and being like, damn, this is your life every day, man. But it's still, like, it's a good progression between their friendship, and it almost sneaks up on you in a way, but it feels earned by the time you get to this point where it's, like, seriously,
It feels organic, like an organic progression does.
But it also feels like, you know, like... Yeah, like, this, the timing has never been right. It's like, yeah, exactly, this stupid fucking bullshit supernatural keeps popping up at the worst moments. But, and I think going back to two novels ago, Death Masks? Was that Mavra threatening Murphy's life?
Mm-hmm. That was the last book. Was it? Yeah, last book.
No, that was Deadbeat.
Mavra.
Oh, yeah, you're
right. That was it. Because she wants the
okay.
Zombie
so, yeah,
book.
So it was two books ago that it was Death Masks, where she got the pictures of Murphy being and crazy.
Yes.
So I think that book, especially when, you know, having to call Murphy and come and help with that moment, was very much like, we're going to have to rely on each other hardcore for this, like, really traumatizing, you know, try to defuse a bomb. And then she went out with Kincaid after that. But, you know, it was the start, I think, a really big jump for both of them.
Well, and she has to go out with Kincaid because Harry has to realize he's jealous.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and then examine his feelings.
Exactly.
So there's, like, wait, at the
spark
end of the chapter
that lit the match.
Where he's like, I should have said something sooner. But I'm like, really? Going through these books.
Yeah, there was no sooner.
There wasn't a sooner. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, like, where you would have naturally said that. Like, you just...
I'm so glad
you're really glad to give yourself shit all the time.
Every day I thank God that you were choking that one time and I got to give you CPR and, like...
The one other thing that I liked about this at the end where Murphy, like, thinks it's... When they are sort of discussing how things would change for them, that she takes that time to apologize for being shitty to him. Because she has been.
She has been. She really was.
Pretty shitty. Like, she was not a likable character in the first book. Like, meh.
There's a lot of people that don't ever forgive Murphy for that.
Yeah.
Like, I see even now to this day, people still not over that. And I'm like, no way. Butcher did a great job of, like, you know, redeeming her or whatever like that, right?
Right.
But yeah, some people are still not over
that. Especially with moments like this where she's like, okay. And where Harry actually just, like, does also state, this was a hard thing for her to do. I'm not gonna continue teasing her because that took a lot for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're my friend, no matter what happens.
This concludes our episode 17.10, Love and Anarchy. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and mcinally.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the magic alive and to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.